Continuing. Pearson's publications have been supported in part by the Pioneer Fund, a foundation whose early leadership had praised aspects of Nazi Germany's racial policies and which has in more recent years given financial support to controversial research into race and intelligence. Between January 1, 1986 and December 31, 1990, Pearson's Institute for the Study of Man received $214,000 from the Pioneer Fund, mostly for, quote, literary activities, unquote. Harry H. Laughlin and Frederick Osborne, that's L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N and O-S-B-O-R-N, scientists who played a leading role in the American eugenics movement and, as I will illustrate, who supported Hitler's race policy, initiated the Pioneer Fund in 1937. Once again, this last sentence because it's critical. Harry H. Laughlin and Frederick Osborne, scientists who played a leading role in the American eugenics movement and, as I will illustrate, who supported Hitler's race policy, initiated the Pioneer Fund in 1937. Textile magnate Wycliffe Draper acted as its primary benefactor, or perhaps it's Wycliffe, W-I-C-K-L-I-F-F-E, Draper is D-R-A-P-E-R. Continuing, the fund's stated purpose was to, quote, improve the character of the American people, unquote, by encouraging the procreation of descendants of, quote, white persons who settled in the original 13 colonies prior to the adoption of the Constitution and or from related stocks, unquote, and to provide aid in conducting research on, quote, race betterment with special reference to the people of the United States, unquote. Today, the Pioneer Fund is the most important financial supporter of research concerning the connection between race and heredity in the United States. It also continues to finance studies in the areas of eugenics, human genetics, and immigration. The Pioneer Fund both provided Pearson with money for his extensive literary activities and helped to make possible the research of nearly all of the scientists whom Pearson defends against the, quote, Marxist techniques, unquote, of crying, again quoting, racism, unquote, Nazism, quote, unquote, and, quote, fascism, unquote. Continuing, the Pioneer Fund, as historian Barry Mailer, M-E-H-L-E-R, has demonstrated, has a dismal record on civil rights issues. I would interject that should hardly come as a surprise given their viewpoints. Continuing, in the post-World War II period, certain recipients of the Pioneer Fund aligned themselves with the American right in fighting against the Supreme Court ruling that declared segregated schooling unconstitutional. Draper, who until the 1960s served as both the main benefactor and the most influential figure in the Pioneer Fund, also worked with the United States House Un-American Activities Committee to demonstrate that blacks were genetically inferior and ought to be, quote, repatriated, unquote, to Africa. Francis E. Walter, W-A-L-T-E-R, the director of the Pioneer Fund in the 1950s and 60s, chaired the same committee. In the 1970s, the Pioneer Fund granted $40,000 to Ralph Scott, professor of educational psychology at the University of Northern Iowa, for his investigation of, quote, forced busing and its relationship to genetic aspects of educatability, unquote. Scott also used the funds to organize anti-busing conferences. When Arthur J. Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, whom Pearson calls, quote, the foremost researcher responsible for the revival of hereditarian thought in recent decades, unquote, became known for his thesis that blacks are hereditarily less intelligent than whites, the Pioneer Fund was eager to finance his work. In 1969, the Berkeley psychologist published an article in which he argued that, on average, blacks were born intellectually inferior to whites. He alleged that black scores on IQ tests were some 15 points lower than were those of whites. The reason, he argued, was that intelligence was an inherited capacity. Since races tend to be, quote, inbred, unquote, blacks were therefore likely to remain lower in intelligence. Jensen received support from another protege of the Pioneer Fund, William Shockley. In 1970, Shockley, co-winner of the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1956, declared that the quality of the human race was declining in the United States because genetic research was being neglected. Shockley insisted that the average IQ of blacks was significantly lower than that of whites and proposed a, quote, sterilization bonus plan, unquote. This plan, which Pearson called, quote, extremely logical in its simplicity, unquote, was designed to, again quoting, reduce the number of babies who don't get a fair shake from their parental dice up, unquote. Shockley proposed to pay, quote, intellectually inferior, unquote, people if they agreed to be sterilized, hoping that, quoting, if a bonus rate of $1,000 for each point below 100 IQ, $30,000 were put in trust for a 70 IQ moron of 20 child potential, it might return $250,000 to taxpayers in reduced costs of mental retardation care, unquote. That wouldn't pay for the seat on a B-1 bomber, I would interject. Continuing, when critics asserted that his plans were reminiscent of Hitler's race policies, he argued that, quote, the lesson to be learned from Nazi history is the value of free speech, not that eugenics is intolerable, unquote. In the late 1960s and 70s, the Pioneer Fund provided Shockley with more than $179,000 over a 10-year period. The disciples of Jensen and Shockley carried forward the new waves of research in racial questions that attracted public attention in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The most important financial backer of their research was, as in the cases of Jensen and Shockley, the Pioneer Fund. J. Philippe Rushton, a psychology professor and Guggenheim Fellow, is representative of this new group. At a meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, Rushton delivered a paper that, quote, proved, unquote, differences in the mental traits of whites, Asians, and blacks. Rushton claimed that, on the average, blacks are more aggressive and sexually active than are whites and Asians. Rushton, whose research is based to a large extent on secondary sources, distinguishes three races, quote, Caucasoids, unquote, quote, Mongoloids, unquote, and, quote, Negroids, unquote, by using more than 50 variables. His conclusion is that the three groups are different in intelligence as well as in brain size, personality, temperament, sexual restraint, and social organizing skills. Rushton finds a distinct pattern in which, quote, Negroids, unquote, and, quote, Mongoloids, unquote, are at opposite ends of the spectrum, and, quote, Caucasoids, unquote, in a median position. Bear in mind that research, again, funded by the Pioneer Fund, a organization founded by Mrs. Laughlin and Osborne, who, as we shall see, not only supported the Nazi eugenics and racial policies, but were honored by the Nazis for their work in eugenics. Skipping down and continuing with Kuhl's text. In the conflict about scientific racism, the word Nazi has degenerated into a term to be used in any situation to discredit the opponent. By providing detailed evidence about the relationship between American eugenicists and Nazi Germany, I hope to ground references to Nazi Germany in the recent controversies about scientific racism on an historically secure basis. The evidence that I present about the history of the Pioneer Fund between 1937 and 1945 and the enthusiasm of its founders for Nazi Germany is not intended to be the only argument against scientific racism. In disputes with scientists active in race research, it is clearly not enough to cry, quote, Nazi, unquote. The development, however, of science in general and scientific racism in particular needs to be seen within its proper historical context. The Nazi connection with American scientists and its continuity as manifested in the Pioneer Fund can help us understand Nazi race ideology and the results and implications of present-day research as part of a shared history of scientific racism. The last sentence again, because it's pivotal. The Nazi connection with American scientists and its continuity as manifested in the Pioneer Fund can help us understand Nazi race ideology and the results and implications of present-day race research as part of a shared history of scientific racism. What we're going to look at next is the extent to which, or the way in which, the Third Reich was able to bolster support for its racial policies and its eugenics policies by conferring academic honors on American academic eugenicists. In the eighth chapter of Kuhl's book, entitled The Reception and Function of American Support in Nazi Germany, we find the following. First, a quote from Arthur Gut, G-U-Umlaut-T-T, Ernst Rudin, and Falk Rütke in the official commentary about the German sterilization law in 1934. This reads, since January 1, 1934, the law of July 14, 1933 on preventing hereditarily ill progeny has been enforced. thereby a years-long controversy about the admissibility of sterilization, about the way of executing it, and the extent of its application has been concluded. In a sense, this concerns not only Germany, but also Europe and the rest of the world. German scholarship is still a model to foreign countries because for decades it has done pioneering work. Thus, if we do not ourselves jeopardize German scientific research and the reputation of German training, particularly in the field of medicine, this is going to remain so in the future too. And German influence in general is going to grow increasingly along with the political regeneration of the German people. In the original archive show about euthanasia in contemporary America and Nazi Germany, we took a look at many of these individuals in developing the German eugenics and euthanasia movements. And I would also recall that an individual who was recently rejected as head of the World Medical Association was the head of the German Medical Association and a veteran of the Nazi euthanasia programs. We looked at that some weeks back. Now, the main body of the text of the beginning of Chapter 8 of Kuhl's book. Nazi incentives to foreign scientists. In 1934, one of Hitler's staff members wrote to Leon Whitney of the American Eugenics Society and asked in the name of the Führer for a copy of Whitney's recently published book, The Case for Sterilization. Whitney complied immediately and shortly thereafter received a personal letter of thanks from Adolf Hitler. In his unpublished autobiography, Whitney reported a conversation he had with Madison Grant about the letter from the Führer. Because he thought that Grant might be interested in Hitler's letter, he showed it to him during their next meeting. Grant only smiled, reached for a folder on his desk, and gave Whitney a letter from Hitler to read. To this, Hitler thanked Grant for writing The Passing of the Great Race and said that, quote, the book was his Bible, unquote. Whitney concluded that, following Hitler's actions, one could believe it. Hitler's personal correspondence with American eugenicists reveals both the influence that American eugenicists had on the highest figures of the Nazi regime and the crucial importance that National Socialists placed on garnering support for their policies among foreign scientists. The Nazi government consistently relied on the support of scientists to propagate their race policies both at home and abroad. These last two sentences again, because they are critical here. Hitler's personal correspondence with American eugenicists reveals both the influence that American eugenicists had on the highest figures of the Nazi regime and the crucial importance that National Socialists placed on garnering support for their policies among foreign scientists. The Nazi government consistently relied on the support of scientists to propagate their race policies both at home and abroad. One effective way of enlisting the aid of the international scientific community was to honor foreign scientists by awarding them honorary degrees from German universities. In 1934, for example, the German Wolfgang von Goethe University in Frankfurt offered Henry Fairfield Osborne, uncle of Frederick Osborne, an honorary doctorate of science. Henry Osborne was one of America's most famous paleontologists, president of the American Museum of Natural History in New York for 25 years, and founder of the Department of Biology at Columbia University. As president of the Second International Congress for Eugenics in 1921, and founder of the American Eugenics Society, he was one of the earliest important figures in the American eugenics movement. Honored by Frankfurt University's overture, Osborne traveled to Nazi Germany to accept his degree. Osborne's honor did not receive much publicity in either the American or the German press. Shortly thereafter, however, a much larger scale attempt to court international scientists attracted widespread attention. In the mid-1930s, the Nazi government decided to use the 550th anniversary of the University of Heidelberg to celebrate the, quote, new spirit, unquote, of academia in Germany. Many representatives of non-German universities were invited, and honorary degrees were given to well-known German and non-German scientists. On this occasion, two renowned eugenicists from the United States were awarded honorary doctorates, Foster Kennedy, a psychiatrist, and Harry H. Laughlin, Laughlin. Kennedy was well-known for his membership in the Euthanasia Society of the United States and for his advocacy of the killing of mentally handicapped persons. one more time. As many people may think that the types of viewpoints which resulted in the Nazi extermination programs were are something that are alien to the United States. Now, bear in mind, again, that Frederick Osborne, along with Harry H. Laughlin, who received this award, were the founders of the Pioneer Fund, which supported the Nazi racial policies and which fund similar viewpoints to this day. Kennedy, of Foster Kennedy, Kennedy was well known for his membership in the Euthanasia Society of the United States and for his advocacy of the killing of mentally handicapped persons. In 1939, 3 years after he received his honorary degree in Nazi Germany, he resigned from the society because he criticized its policy of favoring, quote, voluntary, unquote, euthanasia for people who at one time had been well but later became ill. In contrast, he favored systematic extermination. He thought that it would be for the general good that, quote, euthanasia be legalized for creatures born defective, unquote, whose future would be hopeless in the opinion of a medical board. Kennedy continued to promote euthanasia in the United States, even after the mass killings of mentally handicapped people in Nazi Germany had been revealed to the American public. In May of 1936, the dean of the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Heidelberg and professor of racial hygiene, Carl Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R, who later served as a scientific advisor for the extermination of handicapped people in Nazi Germany, officially offered Laughlin an honorary degree as Doctor of Medicine. Laughlin's reply conveyed deep appreciation. I stand ready to accept this very high honor. Its bestowal will give me particular gratification, coming as it will from a university deeply rooted in the life history of the German people, and a university which has been both a reservoir and a fountain of learning for more than half a millennium. To me, this honor will be doubly valued because it will come from a nation which for many centuries nurtured the human seed stock which later founded my own country, and thus gave basic character to our present lives and institutions, unquote. Laughlin, however, did not travel to Germany to accept the award. The official reason he gave to Schneider was lack of time. An important unofficial reason, however, may have been that the participation of American scientists at the Jubilee was sharply criticized by the American public media. In April of 1936, the New York Times called for a wreath to be laid on the, quote, grave of academic freedom, unquote, in Germany, and claimed that those who went to the Jubilee celebration would become, quote, propaganda tools, unquote, for the Nazis. Laughlin was probably afraid that a journey to Germany would weaken his position within the Carnegie Foundation, which was already becoming more critical of the work of the Eugenics Record Office. Despite his wariness of being regarded publicly as allied with the Nazi government, Laughlin was proud of the honorary degree. He received congratulations from several colleagues in the eugenics movement and was acknowledged in both the German and American press. Following the Jubilee, Laughlin wrote to Schneider and thanked him again for the, quote, high honor, unquote. He requested that Schneider mail the diploma to him in the United States and concluded his letter with the following remarks, quote, I consider the conferring of this high degree upon me not only as a personal honor, but also as evidence of a common understanding of German and American scientists of the nature of eugenics as research in the practical application of those fundamental biological and social principles which determine the racial endowments and the racial health, physical, mental, and spiritual, of future generations. Unquote. Laughlin received the degree from the German consulate in New York City on December 8, 1936. The diploma lauded him as a, quote, successful pioneer of practical eugenics and the far-seeing representative of racial policy in America, unquote. The cultivation of non-German eugenicists, geneticists, and anthropologists by the Nazi regime was not based primarily on a desire to acquire scientific information. Rather, the main purpose was to generate support for a propaganda strategy designed to quell opposition to Nazi race policies. On the one hand, this propaganda effort was directed at the German population. The Nazis believed that favorable statements by well-known scientists from other countries would give the German people the impression that scientific communities abroad favored Nazi race policy and viewed it as compatible with scientific knowledge. On the other hand, Nazis relied on the approval of foreign scientists to further their propaganda efforts outside of Germany. Statements by non-German scientists were more credible than were those of German scientists, who were often regarded as mere puppets of the new regime. Thus, The Racial Policy Office informed foreign guests at the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin that Nazi race policy was based on, quote, the internationally accepted, unquote, science of racial hygiene, and referred to eugenics measures in the United States and Scandinavia. Similarly, in 1935, Walter Gross, G-R-O-S-S, or probably Walter Gross, head of the Racial Policy Office, informed the international press and foreign diplomats in Germany that the scientists who had attended the 1934 Congress of the International Federation of Eugenic Organization approved of the Nazi race policy. So note again, the honorary degree is conferred on, among others, Harry Laughlin, co-founder of the Pioneer Fund, an element of historical and intellectual continuity between the American and German eugenicists of the Hitler period and their counterparts today. And note that these degrees, not only that the relationship between the American and German eugenicists not only served to provide an intellectual foundation for the German eugenics and racial policies, but it also served as a very profound propaganda tool for the justification and consequent perpetuation of those policies. Of course, the ultimate result of those policies was the extermination programs of the Holocaust and its related activities. What we're going to look at next concerns the Nazi propaganda attacks on those who criticize their racial policies. And I think in the nature of these attacks, which are broadly laid at the campaign of the, quote, Jewish press, unquote, one can see a very strong similarity to the nature of the intellectual attacks by contemporary scientific racists on their critics. The difference is that whereas the Nazis attacked them as Zionists and the members of the Jewish press and international Jewry, today the scientific racists are terming their critics to be Marxists, international communists, etc. Two concepts that were, by the way, very closely allied in the German, in the Nazi political and racial cosmology. Continuing with Kuhl's text and skipping down, in viewing American reactions to their race policies, Nazis artificially distinguish between the affirmative reactions of, quote, reasonable, unquote, American scientists, those are the scientists who accepted those awards, such as the ones we've already looked at, and negative reactions expressed in the supposedly Jewish-controlled public media. Looking back in 1939, Gross recalled that the leadership recognized a, quote, strange rift, unquote, abroad in the early years of the National Socialist regime. While the public media had nothing positive to say about Nazi race policies and criticized the sterilization law, scientific and political representatives were traveling privately to Germany in order to study the results of their policy. Nazi propaganda explained the negative perception abroad as a result of the, quote, lie campaign, unquote, of the, quote, Jewish press, unquote. Immediately following the implementation of race policies, quote, international Jewry, unquote, succeeded in denouncing Germany, quote, once again, unquote, as the, quote, classical country of barbarism, unquote. Nazi propaganda claimed that foreign scientists only gradually succeed in convincing an uninformed public about the beneficial character of Nazi race policies. As Gross recognized, foreign scientists were crucial for changing public opinion abroad. Quote, their word, unquote, he claimed, again quoting, was able to balance the opinion of 100 chatterers, unquote. The Nazis portrayed the United States as a country with an enlightened group of scientists who were thwarted by a Jewish-manipulated public and government. The country with the strongest group of eugenicists, they argued, faced opposition from, quote, international Jewry, unquote, which wielded control over large parts of the mass media and government. The image of the United States as divided between, quote, enlightened, unquote, scholars and a, quote, manipulated, unquote, public helped Nazi propaganda to counter American criticism. In so doing, they were aided by American eugenicists who shared their view. I would note that the nature of the intellectual attacks on their critics by the German eugenicists, by the Nazi eugenicists, is very similar to the nature of the attack on contemporary American scientific racists. Note again, repeating a short section from the earlier text, of Roger Pearson, beneficiary of Pioneer Fund funding, associate of the World Anti-Communist League, and looked upon with favor by Ronald Reagan. Pearson denounced, quote, the strong opposition by Marxists and other leftists, unquote, against research with racial implications. He attacked both academia and the media as bastions of politically motivated opposition to the pursuit of, quote, objective, unquote, science. Very similar to the nature of the arguments that the Nazis directed against their critics abroad. And bear in mind that, in part, the relationship with their American eugenicist, their American eugenicist counterparts was that relationship served to counteract, from a propaganda standpoint, the criticism of the Nazi racial and eugenics policies. And skipping down into the text of Stefan Kuhl, although recognized, here again, the nature of the arguments that the American scientific racists direct against their critics, although recognizing the correctness of Eysenck's and Jensen's theses, they were confronted by, quote, hostile students, unquote, and therefore refused to extend support outside of private conversations. Eysenck concluded that it was in just such a manner that many Germans became anti-Semites, quote, under duress, unquote. Eysenck's biographer, H.B. Gibson, commented that the Nazis had been defeated in war, but, quote, anyone with Eysenck's intelligence and grasp of reality knew that the execution of a few psychopaths, unquote, solved little in historical terms. In Eysenck's eyes, according to Gibson, the most powerful modern heirs of the Nazis were the various extreme political groups who often identified themselves as, quote, communists, unquote, or, quote, Marxists, unquote. The Nazis said they were international Jewry, etc., and the contemporary scientific racists decry their critics as Marxists. What we're going to look at next concerns the very kind treatment that was accorded the German eugenicists and the many of the doctors who engaged in the euthanasia programs, which, again, grew directly out of the German eugenics program and, in turn, led directly to the Nazi extermination programs. And, again, the German eugenicists supported intellectually and politically by their American counterparts. Of the kid glove treatment given the German eugenicists by the Nuremberg doctor's trial in 1946. And we're going to come back to one of the American prosecutors in this trial, Leon Jaworski, a man who went on to develop quite a name for himself in just a minute. But of the kid glove treatment afforded the German eugenicists by the 1946 doctor's trial, Stefan Kuhl writes as follows. In a section entitled German Eugenicists and Their Relation to the United States After 1945, we find the following. In the Nuremberg doctor's trial in 1946, only a small group of German racial hygienists was accused of participating in government-sponsored massacres. In their defense, those accused referred to the acceptance of the scientific basis of their work outside Germany. So note that the support for the German eugenics programs from their American counterparts also served as a defense for many of the German racial hygienists at Nuremberg. Repeating the last sentence. In their defense, those accused referred to the acceptance of the scientific basis of their work outside Germany. This strategy was based on the claim that democratic states had provided a model for the Nazi race policy. Physicians accused of organizing the, quote, euthanasia program, unquote, in Nazi Germany pointed to the United States to prove that elimination of, quote, inferior elements, unquote, was not unique to Germany. The 1927 United States Supreme Court decision affirming the legitimacy of eugenic compulsory sterilization in the United States was used by a German doctor as an example of the precedents for Nazi racial hygiene. Hermann Furnmüller, Fannmüller, a psychiatrist who, as director of the state mental hospital in Haar near Munich, was responsible for killing hundreds of mentally and physically handicapped people, explained to the court that the exterminations were, quote, just as legal as the regulation for prevention of transmission of hereditary disease and infection in marriage. These laws were passed during the National Socialist regime, but the ideas from which they arose are centuries old, unquote. The head of the Nazi program, and Kuhl continues, the head of the Nazi program for the killing of the mentally handicapped, Karl Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, claimed before the court that the Nazi program for sterilization and elimination of, quote, Life Not Worthy of Living, unquote, was based on ideas and experiences in the United States.